what happens to the victims of the slave trade, these abductions and so forth? The cartels are not involved solely in drug trafficking or arms trafficking. They don't much care, and apparently using human beings as currency is big, big business. Okay. Stand by. We'll take a little break and come back right away with Brad Barker. His website is thehalocorp.com. Sign up for his newsletter, The Harbinger. You will be glad that you did. This is Coast to Coast AM. Brad, is it Stockholm Syndrome, or is it drug addiction, or is it a combination that keeps these, or is this an utter feeling of there's no way out, there's no escape, so they just do as they are told? And then what happens to these victims of the slave trade when they're, you know, when they hit 15 and they're too old for some of the pervs that are out there trying to buy them?
You're right. You know, it is a blend of narcotics, Stockholm syndrome, threats that their family are going to feel the brunt of any kind of retributive action should they not behave in a way that they're being forced to. And you know, John, we covered so much ground. I feel as if I'm pulling you down my disaster ADD here, so I apologize for that. I wanted to offer one more plug, if you don't mind terribly, for the Harbinger magazine, because we've just scratched the surface of a lot of different topics, and your listeners could go deep on any one of these. So in order for them to be able to have access to that, they just have to sign up for it, and it's free, and it comes out every month. And if they go to thehalocorp.com and then just go down to the bottom of the page on the, off to the right, you just click on the Harbinger link, and people can see archived copies and just go to any of these topics that we've been covering tonight and sign up, and we'll push this to you. And of course, you can reply to those and get a direct dialogue with any one of the folks over here at Halo that can answer any of these questions. Yours, of course, is, you know, when someone gets abducted or forcibly taken or sold into sex trade, you know, they serve a purpose for a time. And as soon as they depreciate and they're no longer yielding what they used to, they do a couple of different things. And I just want to shine a bright light on a pretty dark section of this. Is pornography is a overwhelmingly lucrative revenue stream. And if people are not paying the ransoms, or the kidnappers are not asking for ransoms, rather, because they know that they can film these people performing sex acts, and people don't age. And you're mentioning earlier that the depreciation of the victim is going to get them released or kicked to the street or even killed. They don't ask for the ransom of, say, $1 million when selling the images and the videos of them doing this stuff is getting them 10 times that. So they try to keep them as long as possible, and when they are no longer performing the sex acts, they'll put them into human bondage. They could have them recruiting other people, because Stockholm syndrome will allow them to be part of the clan shortly. They have them manufacturing, cooking, growing narcotics. They have them act as proctors or trainers for the young girls that are performing these sex acts, and they do it willingly at this point because of the Stockholm syndrome and the drug addiction. And I just want to underscore that killing someone is not the only way to take a life. That once this has happened to these people, they're fragged. I mean, they are no longer the person they were. So, you know, it's a very deep cottage industry, and it's so lucrative. Human trafficking is a scary topic, and it's not getting the media attention that it deserves up until recently, because the victims are so young these days, and you know, this is a very hard topic to discuss with a 12-year-old. You know, a lot of parents don't like talking about the birds and the bees. You're going to bring this up to them?
Well, yeah, there was a news report about this 13-year-old hitman was found, a 13-year-old hitman was found tortured and murdered down south of the border there. And I mentioned that there was a story out that Woody Harrelson had gotten killed in a car wreck in Australia or something that appears to be a completely bogus report, just in case anybody was buying it.
Yeah, it's off.
And who knows? It may turn out to be true tomorrow because of the disinformation factor. But anyway, his dad is Charles Harrelson,
right,
who was convicted of killing federal judge John Wood back in 78, a hit put out on him by this drug guy named Chagra. And then you had this little prosecutor down in Texas just got gunned down in the parking lot on his way to the courthouse.
Right.
And he was working on cases, you know, Mickey Mouse stuff like like Aryan Brotherhood and drug cartel stuff. These cartel cats are serious. So it's really no wonder that reporters aren't down there, you know, that Geraldo Rivera is not down there, mustachioed with a sombrero on, you know, doing a really deep investigative report on cartel activity. I mean, they'll just whack you clean out.
You know, there's a couple of really good resources out there. One is called the Narco Blog. And I want to underscore that social media have you ever heard the term crowdsourcing?
Yes.
Okay, so crowdsourcing, I mean, it's just so amazing what's happened in just the last 5 years of how instantaneous data can come from citizens on the street of crimes being committed, where they can serve up to the cloud their location, their latitude and longitude, video images, and a short text of what they saw, and law enforcement can respond in real time. I mean, faster than 911, faster than sending Barney Fife down there. I mean, and it's archived, and it's allowing law enforcement to see trends in cyber so that they can start to develop countermeasures for this kind of stuff. And the cartel is getting smart on how the citizens are doing this and thwarting their activities. And there's some measurable retributive action of overtly killing people, hanging them from bridges, writing notes on them, saying that this is what happens when people tweet. And you can read the Narco Blog or Borderland Beat and just know that it's produced in English and Spanish, and a lot of it is happening in Mexico, so it doesn't have any FCC regs. It's all First Amendment stuff. There's some really, really horrific images, so just know that. And we use a lot of this open source intel, but once it's verified, as actionable data that we can then do things with.
What are those sites again, Brad?
That would be the Narco Blog, blog, and then Borderland Beat. And we have found this to be very good resource and an aggregator of real live cartel crime information. And we use it because it's so fast. You know, if the government or local law enforcement is going to put together a quick training program, it has to go through all these different steps of bureaucracy. And by the time the first officer gets the first class of the new training, it's been a year, and the bad guys are on to new method of operation, which is how we use our training of hyper-realistic training and stress inoculation training, so that we can prepare first responders and law enforcement in very immersive, experiential training methodologies so that they can go through not just death by PowerPoint kind of curriculum, but actually immerse themselves in scenarios that are very much like what they might encounter downrange on an operation where the outcomes are hardly certain, and we make sure that it's as accurate and as real as possible, so that when the real operation comes down, these guys don't behave in a way that is going to, you know, coming back to the first hour where we talked about, you know, tunnel vision and auditory exclusion and, you know, fight or flight. So immersing the operators and officers in these really realistic scenarios, which is a blend of virtual reality, reality-based training with non-lethal training munitions by companies like PDT, which is Practical Defense Training Technologies. These are non-lethal bullets that fire out of a real gun that don't hurt you, so that you can go through these scenarios and see what it's like to be in a firefight. I mean, quite frankly, law enforcement right now must qualify with their weapon twice a year. I think cartels and other law enforcement or other organized crime syndicates and gangs, they train a little bit more frequently. And so these are the types of training scenarios that we develop with our partners so that we can get this information to the people that need it most so that they can respond against the new evolution of bad guy so that they can address threat and risk in a measurable way and train against real-world threats without real-world consequences. And, sure. And this is the future of training. This is the future. And it's now.
So... All right, then. Without just becoming paranoid and afraid to talk to anybody, I mean, our parents always told us, don't talk to strangers. Bad idea. How do you avoid a kidnapping other than armed guards and armored limousines? I mean, who are the at-risk groups, really? And if their parents are looking after them, then what are you going to do? If they're members of a large family, what are you going to do? I mean, what groups are being stolen from the most? We saw that movie Taken with Liam in it, and that's a movie version. I'm sure it's worse.
Well, there's a lot of folks that we know that were technical advisors on that movie and several of the other ones that have come out recently. That highlights special operations folks and Hollywood obviously has to, you know, put the equation together with the hero and the, you know, the tragedy and the love story, and he gets the girl and they live happily ever after. But you know, some of the methods of operation are absolutely spot on. So prevention is really paramount, because as I talked about that time continuum and how in the United States we are arguably the best in the world at response. Well, there's that whole left-hand side of that time continuum that we haven't really talked about. And that is doing everything that you possibly can do so that bang never occurs. Now, the bang is the incident, whatever it may be. That's that whole insert your threat here, whatever your worst day is, that's the bang. So to the left of the bang is all of the things that the bad guys do to prepare, because very rarely is it a crime of opportunity where they just happen to be right next to this person and then they abduct them right there just because they got lucky. Does that happen? Of course. But largely because this is, you know, a $30 billion plus industry a year, there's entire syndicates of organized crime that are behind it, and they have got this down to an entire automated logistics and supply chain. They cruise onto social media sites and they look at images of victims or potential victims and say, bring me her. I need them by, next Thursday, at this address, and all right, call you later. And then there's methods of elicitation and the automation of target selection that we discussed earlier that come into play. And if you can understand how that all works, then you can reduce the likelihood of you becoming a target. But you have to, before any of that happens, you have to admit that the things that we're talking about are happening. You have to engage it and not jump under your bed and pull the covers over you. You have to say, okay, this is happening. And no, it's not just happening in this country or that country or over there. It's happening here. It's happening in my neighborhood. It's happening in my community. So we're at risk here. And we're not just talking about kids. We're talking about adults too. And understanding the process of target selection and understanding how you have to make yourself less visible, less valuable, and less vulnerable by who you interact with, what you put out on your social media. Don't wear the Rolex to the ATM, at 2 o'clock in the morning in the bad neighborhood. I mean, all those things that are obviously common sense, there is now a cyber equivalent. And also know that the bad guys are getting much more savvy with technology, and they're patient. And that's one thing that we are not in the United States. We are a drive-through world with microwave, meals and high-speed bandwidth. We want everything yesterday, and we want the best of everything yesterday. Those that plan to do us harm are much more patient than we are. And And we have to understand that and understand the nature and the mindset of those that plan to do us harm. And then we can break down their method and build solutions.
Understood. Well, then, once this has happened and you're called into action to extract somebody, to rescue somebody, any particular incidents, there must be some incidents that that will remain in your mind from now on.
Oh, of course. Well, I just want to point out that an extraction, a rescue operation is an absolute last resort, because you never know what's behind the door. You don't know who's the captor. You don't know what type of defense mechanisms they have. You don't know if they're armed or what weapons they have. That is key. So every operation that we go on is driven by intelligence. You have to get as much data as possible so that you can make decisions. This is not at all like what you see in these movies.
Do we ever try and do a buyback program? You know, what sort of things can you talk about? Can you talk about that you might try before kicking the door in?
Well, clearly, when someone has your loved one, they are negotiating from a position of advantage. So you gotta do as you're told right off the bat. You have to understand what the demands are. And again, in a situation like a kidnap for ransom, which, as I mentioned earlier, is on the decline because of so many things that they've got in mind for these people once they've been taken. When you get a ransom demand, that's when you can glean intelligence. If they roll somebody up and they have other intentions, they're not going to ask for that ransom. So you don't know where to begin. It's like looking for a needle in a stack of needles. You know, you don't know where to begin. You have to, in a ransom situation where they're going to be interfacing with you, there are things and techniques and negotiation tactics that you can utilize to glean information and establish some level of rapport with the kidnapper. And there needs to be some level of rapport, and I'm not being flippant with that term. You do need to create a relationship with this person in order for you to dialogue so that they get the ransom that they want. And it's a negotiation just like any commodity. If you've been to other countries where the barter system exists, where they hit you high so you can hit them low, that is precisely the type of technique that you use. But the overarching emotional issue that makes this so difficult is that we're talking about somebody's life. And if you have a headache that day, or you haven't had your Starbucks on the way to work, and you don't have your mindset cognitively switched on in every function moving towards this, then things can go wildly wrong. And that's why preparedness and understanding of the nature of threat is so, so critical, because, not to be cliche, but an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You've got to be able to avoid the flashpoint, the bang, at any time, because there's not a whole lot of folks like us out there.
No, and there's
it's a $32 billion a year industry, and we're just one shop.
I gotcha. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. This has been a quick 2.5 hours. We've got some more to go. Let's take our break and come back with Brad Barker. His website is thehalocorp.com. Go there and return soon. This is Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, I am delighted to have as our guest back from last year when he spoke with George Knapp on the 15th of April, Brad Barker, the president and founder of Halo Corporation. Several people want to know the name of the website again. It is thehalocorp.com. And just go to the bottom right-hand side of the page. You'll see the Harbinger. Click on it, and you'll see how the newsletter is put together. And it's just a lot of intel or information with a good shot of intel in it. In the end, it's up to you to make the decision what you roll with and what you don't. But it's always good to, as the Boy Scouts say, be prepared. And we are woefully remiss in our preparedness, it would appear. Alrighty then, Little Fluffy Clouds. That band is called The Orb, for anybody who wants to know, The Orb. In fact, one of our shuttlecraft here on board the mothership is called the Orbuloid. I don't fly that one very much. It's a strange color, and, well, I don't really care for the name. All right, back for our final segment with Brad Barker in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Brad Barker, what do you make of all this school shooting stuff?
Well, it's terrible. You know, it's unbelievable the trend that we have developed here in the United States where kids have access to weapons, they're bringing them to school, and they're using them. And, you know, it's not just guns. You know, this isn't a gun issue. It's a behavioral issue, which you mentioned earlier. If you can identify some of these behavior patterns, it's funny how when they finally get this guy, whoever the assailant is that does these type of things, whether it's a Columbine or Virginia Tech or, you know, obviously Sandy Hook, and, you know, there's been another dozen shootings since Sandy Hook that haven't been reported in the media nearly as much, because people are starting to realize that these assailants that are going after children or each other are doing it to go big. They're doing it for their celebrity. And there's two kinds of threats. There's the internal threat where you've got student on student, and then there's the external threat where you've got somebody who penetrates the campus and trespasses and then commits the crime. And invariably, when they go through the after action report and identify who this person is, there's notes or a Facebook post or a manifesto, or they've reached out to a doctor, or they're on meds, or at the end of the day, you have to give people access to the information so that they can see these types of behavioral recognition patterns and look at what we refer to as pre-incident indicators and see that this is a powder keg. And, you know, when I was a kid, that we used to call it going postal. Well, there's so many signs out there that the only way that you can know what to look for is through training. And you have to look at all of these different things, because invariably in the news report, you always hear the expert after the fact saying, well, you know, we saw this and he was on these meds and then he got off his meds, or man, he pushed out this note and it never got to his doctor. You know, there's always some kind of extenuating circumstance where if you had the benefit of hindsight and you were trained what to look for, then maybe something could have been done. You know, obviously there's no guarantees when you've lost it, but if you give people the access to the data so that they can see the pre-incident indicator or these behavioral patterns, then they can intercede and reduce the risk. And this is not a gun issue. I believe this is a psychosocial issue. And I think that media plays a role. I think that parents play a role. I think that teachers play a role. And I think law enforcement plays a role. I don't think that this can be handled by bureaucracy or laws. I think this has to be done at a much more local level, and you can't legislate this type of crime.
You know, when you take the combination of celebrity obsession, either with the celebrity that you're observing, and conversely making yourself into a celebrity by committing a heinous act, combined with this propensity for assigning blame, always, and then combine that with all these images that you're bombarded with from television primarily, and then the video game part, the role-playing effect on the head. I understand that even going back to the old Dungeons and Dragons, that really put the zap on a lot of kids' heads.
You're right. I remember that.
They got into it just a little bit too much.
Well, you know, that again is not the game's fault. Okay, it's people have been in a mental state. People have been psycho and socially well or unwell based on some expert's view of what wellness is.
Yes.
There's always been people off. And I'm sure you have people in your social circle right now that you don't want to go have a drink with, you don't want to go camping with, you don't want to go spend personal time with, and you probably don't want them watching your children. Okay, because there's something in your mind, in your psychiatry, in your subconscious, where you are seeing the signs subconsciously that this person's making you uncomfortable. Now, have you been trained on that? No. Your subconscious mind knows that this person is reminding you of somebody who has hurt you or somebody that you care about. Now, in law enforcement training, they talk about, they've got the sixth sense. You know, this guy that I pulled over, he was throwing me a vibe, or, you know, a little voice told me. Okay, well, God bless all the people that keep us safe for a living. Yeah, I'd like to be counted among those folks, but we're not psychic. We don't have the force. Okay, Yoda isn't real. Okay, so when your subconscious mind is talking to you, listen to it. Okay, so let's break it down a little bit further. There are training modalities that you can go through that go through your limbic system and your sympathetic nervous system that you can listen to and you can respond to, and you can break those down into 12 different behavior patterns that are going to lead to something. And we can get all into this, if people subscribe to the magazine, The Harbinger, and we go into this very deeply, and we run curriculum on this kind of thing. And these events can be reduced. They can be avoided. But if we don't shine a bright light on it and measure it and build curriculum that we can deliver to not only law enforcement but to teachers and parents so that everybody's getting on the same page, because just like in the disasters we talked about earlier in the show, the communication, coordination, collaboration, it exists here too. I told you that it's the same movie from Katrina to Haiti to Banda Aceh. Well, it's here too in the schools. If you don't understand what people are doing, if you don't identify the threat, if you don't understand the behavioral triggers that are going to cause somebody to do something, if you don't listen to the cries for help, if you don't acknowledge that there's something a little off, then unfortunately we're going to watch them on TV, and some teacher is going to say, we knew Johnny was just a little different. And whatever.
Why is it always Johnny?
I don't know. Whoever Johnny's parents are, they need to be taken out back. Poor Johnny, that guy, he just got dealt a poor hand. But on a serious note, these folks, I certainly believe, are going to leave breadcrumbs that's going to lead up to this flashpoint, and we know in other aspects of crisis management that those breadcrumbs are there. They get measured, and then doctrine is written, and curriculum is developed for the doctrine, and people are trained. Okay, this new thing, and I don't mean new that there's never been violence in schools, but man, oh man, you got to admit the past 5 years or more. My gosh, it's just happening. And since Sandy Hook, it has skyrocketed. And unfortunately, our government is hamstrung and they don't have a solution to the problem. So they want to legislate it. Well, when people are cognitively not listening to man's law, there's no amount of paper or laws or, legislation that's going to prevent them from breaking the law.
Well, let me ask you this, Brad. How do you train these human beings to observe and not oppress?
Well, see, that's a very fine balance because, first of all, in a very arrogant way, you need to get good training, because there's good and bad everything out there.
Sure.
And you can get false doctrine, for lack of a better term, of let me back up. This situation in schools has a term, and it's called an active shooter. Okay, this is when it's a law enforcement term of when someone has a gun, they're shooting people, and they're active. They haven't stopped. They're still doing it. They're at large. They're armed and dangerous, and they're killing people. Okay, when an active shooter is called to law enforcement, they respond in a myriad ways. Now, I say it's a myriad ways because there isn't a unified doctrine. If you go to some of the more, let's say, less forward-leaning metropolitan communities, they are going to dial 911, and then they're going to cordon off the area so no one can go in. school's going to go on lockdown, and the SWAT team's going to arrive. And then they are going to breach the doors, and they're going to do a tactical method of room clearing until they find the shooter, and they neutralize the shooter, and the place is rendered safe, and then all the forensic guys are going to come in, and they're going to process the scene. Well, that is what has been going on for decades. Okay, well, that is starting to change. And some of the more progressive, forward-leaning metropolitan special weapons and tactics teams, or SWAT teams, or SRTs, special response teams, or task forces, have said, screw the old doctrine. Okay, what you've got is an active shooter in there killing kids or killing adults in a business park. You know, whoever the first responder is, the first on scene, must engage the target and neutralize the threat now. Stop waiting for the SWAT team. Let's not cordon off the area. The person, I mean, how many rounds can these people kick off in, you know, 4 minutes, which is the average response time, you know, we've come to learn.
So like a few, even with a seven-shot magazine.
Exactly. Well, so they bring more magazines.
Exactly.
You know, so that's not the answer. And this, you know, I obviously don't want this to turn into a gun thing, because that's obviously polarizing and not what we're trying to do here. But
right.
But what I'm trying to just get across is that there isn't a rule book yet. This response method of operation is still evolving, and unfortunately here in the United States and globally, I think it's just human nature. We don't develop a whole lot of preparedness, proactive security modalities until something really, really bad happens. And we joke around this because we use sort of gallows humor to get our point across, because obviously we train a lot of law enforcement, military, and of course they have access to a lot of this information. So they're somewhat, you know, they're familiar with the jargon and they're familiar with the threat. But, you know, we don't learn to block until somebody's punched us in the face and broken our nose a couple of times. And it's that left of bang where our training model is, because we don't want to train people where they're already amazing. And in the United States, our responders are amazing, arguably the best in the world for response.
Yes.
We're really freaking good at it.
Yeah, they are.
That's left of the bang, that time continuum before the flashpoint, which is where a lot of the hyper-realistic immersive training that we offer for not only responders but for the average Joe, for civilians, for the soccer moms, for the people who just want to learn a little bit more about some stuff, because we have to acknowledge this is happening. And it's not a one-off event. It wasn't a single catastrophe or a single terrible event. There's a lot of them I can point to.
Sure.
And
what are the numbers that you have, Brad, on the occurrences of abductions in the country through the human trafficking apparatus?
Well, I'll go to some open source areas, because unfortunately, when you go to government statistics, the government doesn't talk to itself. Homeland Security numbers are different than Department of Justice's numbers, which is different than State Department's numbers, which is different than the intelligence community's numbers. And you know, so how they define kidnapping and abduction are different. You know, you've got domestic kidnappings. You've got that's where a biological parent steals a child from another
Sure.
biological parent without permission. I mean, there's all kinds of different definitions, and we're not fixed on the same definitions internally. So I usually point to the open source areas, like the Center for Missing and Exploited Children has real good databases out there. The faith-based community, and this isn't a religious thing, it's just that, you know, these are infrastructures out there that that will spend time and money and have a huge volunteer base for collecting data. The Latter-day Saints have real good information. Catholic Online has real good information. Anti-Defamation League has really good information. We like to go to these places because the numbers are stable. And in between the different branches of U.S. government, the numbers are dynamic, and that doesn't really help us. But they're big numbers. I mean, you got 2.4 million victims at any given time. You know, at any given time, you got 2.4 million people in some form of bondage. the percentage of victims exploited for sex slavery is about 80%. So the overwhelming majority of people that are forcibly taken is for the sex trade. That says a lot about the human condition these days.
Now, is that just in this country, or is this apparatus?
Globally,
okay. Well, it could be worse, okay.
Number of victims exploited for forced labor is 17%, over 80% for the sex trade. Ratio of females to males, 2 out of every 3 is a female. Annual value of a victim trafficking in dollars, $32 billion. The average cost of a human slave, $90. Odds of rescue, 1 chance in 100.
Unbelievable.
So you got to pause for a second and let those numbers touch you. This is a huge, huge thing. There's more people right now that are in some form of bondage that are suffering from some of the diseases that people are marching for or walking for or doing marathons for. And I don't see a human trafficking marathon. There isn't a walk for trafficking. So some of these NGOs and faith-based groups and nonprofits need to step up, acknowledge this, and let's start raising some money for some awareness and for some training and for some care for these folks. Because when they come back, when they do get released or they do get rescued or God bless them, if they do figure out how to escape, they come back and, they're fragged. They need care. They need some serious love and attention so that they can take care of themselves and assimilate into society in some capacity and become a productive member of our community. And, we work with several victims that that have come back, and they are law enforcement advocates, and they join our training cadre and lecture at Boys and Girls Clubs and faith-based places and law enforcement communities and military bases because, the human trafficking is a huge, huge funding source for terrorism globally. So it's become a national security issue now.
Okay, so vast sums of money make everything possible. The establishment is asleep at the switch, and the freelancers like you are the ones that are raising the awareness and getting it done. Is it okay if I say that, if you won't?
I won't hang up on you if you said that again.
All right. Well, I hate to say this, but we are approaching the end of the program. In fact, I hear that goofy little song that I just love. Brad Barker, it's been a total pleasure to have you on the program tonight. It won't be a year before we talk again, okay?
I certainly hope so, John. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to answer any calls from any of your listeners. I was looking forward to that.
Well, so was I, but you have large thoughts, and the answers are too, and then again, I took us on side trips with an obtuse question here or there. Thanks, sir. We'll catch you on the next one.
Cheers.
All right. You heard the man. So until next Saturday night and beyond, be well, everybody. And when the hour approaches, go to your radio, turn on, tune in, and as the Star Trek boys and girls used to say, beam up. It's been a pleasure to be with you tonight. See you down the road.